Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. Make sure you stay tuned because next hour, I'll be joined by NPR member stations throughout the American West. We'll be heard on our Earth Day special in Arizona, Southern Nevada, Colorado, and up and down California. So let your friends and family members know if they're in any of those radio markets. We'll be bringing you that special coming up at 11 o'clock right here on KPCC. But right now, we turn our attention to the good news on COVID-19. We've had so many challenging periods over the past nearly 14 months. And with us to talk about where we stand right now, which is far, far better than previously, is Professor of Nursing and Public Health at UCLA, Kristen R. Choi. Professor Choi, so good to have you back with us.
Good morning, Larry.
Well, this is great news. The California finds itself with the lowest COVID-19 case rate in the continental U.S. How did we get here?
Yes, seeing that news is really exciting, especially when I think about where California was back in the winter when we were perhaps one of the worst states in the country. We've made such great progress since then, and it's really exciting to see that happening here in the spring. Certainly a part of it is our vaccination. We are also making great progress with vaccination. At this point, about 45% of adults in California have gotten at least one vaccine, and we also, you know, have taken a lot of precautions in other ways that we know help reduce transmission of the virus. And so very exciting to see us at this point, and I hope that we continue.
Is part of it that we had such a terrible rise in cases and hospitals reaching their limits, and we had so many people that were exposed that just leaves fewer people now to get COVID-19?
Yes, I think that's certainly a part of it. And, you know, ideally, that's not the way that we would have wanted to get to immunity. It would have been better, of course, for folks to be able to get vaccinated without having to be sick and deal with the risks that comes with that, including for some people, long-term symptoms. But that was our situation back in the winter. And now people that have natural immunity from having COVID and with those who are vaccinated, we are in a place where things are looking really good here in California at the moment.
If you have questions for Professor Choi, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, the AirTalk page, kpecc.org as well. You can tweet at AirTalk or post on the AirTalk Facebook page. Professor Choi, you know, one of the questions so many people are asking now is it really necessary to wear masks out in the world, that the amount of the virus that's out there appears to be so low. We have such a high percentage of people that are vaccinated at least once, if not fully vaccinated, and others who've had COVID-19 in recent months. So what is the rationale for continuing to wear a face covering in the world?
Yeah, you know, I think that given what we know now about how the virus spreads and what transmission looks like outdoors in California, I think we're in a place where we can cautiously start to think about, you know, being confident about being outside without a mask in some cases. A couple of things. So first, we know that kind of the big things that prevent transmission of the virus are wearing a mask, being distanced from others, being outdoors. We know that the virus doesn't spread as easily outdoors. And then, of course, being vaccinated also offers quite a lot of protection. I think that for folks who want to be outdoors without masks, it's important to think about how can you make sure that those other lines of defense are in place. So are you able to be distanced? Are you with people who are also vaccinated to make sure that we're reducing risk for transmission as much as possible? When it comes to being outdoors, I think it's also important just to use common sense about the activities that we're talking about. So if you're out on a hiking trail, you know, by yourself or perhaps with just members of your household who are vaccinated, it's probably safe safe in those sorts of cases to not wear a mask. If we're talking about walking down a crowded sidewalk with a lot of others around whose vaccination status you don't know, then of course you'd want to have more of those lines of defense in place. And I would just encourage folks to think about how can you have as many of those lines of defense in place as possible to try to protect yourself and others.
I was out hiking on Monday, and I was out with my mom, actually, and we had a runner who was approaching from the opposite directions, kind of a narrow trail. And so we put our masks on, and the runner is just covered in sweat, breathing heavily, said, "Vaccinated," and then goes... We just broke out laughing. It was so funny. But
the defense up, and it's not a bad idea. Those scenarios to put up that mask for an additional line of defense.
Yeah, it was just funny because I thought, if the poor guy had been wearing a mask, he would have really been challenged on his run. If you have questions again for Professor Choi, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. One of our former KPCC employees saw someone wearing a shirt that said vaccinated on it recently. So it's kind of funny to make sure that anybody who would question would know. And there's nothing, of course, to guarantee that. But I guess who's going to go to the trouble of buying a shirt that says vaccinated if you really weren't to wear that out in the world? 866-893-KPECC. But that shirt would not be enough to get you into a special section at Dodger Stadium that they're opening up on Saturday night. The section will not require distancing between the people sitting in the sections. They'll still be expected to wear masks, and they'll have to show documentation that they have been fully vaccinated. Now, up in San Francisco, the Giants have been doing that at their park for some time. There have been some other stadiums that have had sections. Petco in San Diego has had a section right behind home plate. And it's so funny to watch the games from Petco when the Dodgers were there a few days ago and to see all these unmasked people that were sitting there in this section. Now, they were distanced, but they were unmasked in that area where they had to show full vaccination. Professor Choi, what do you think about venues doing this to create more of a typical fan experience for the fully vaccinated?
Yeah, I think in California, we are in a good place where we can be cautiously optimistic about trying these sorts of things. Again, if we think about those four lines of defense, being outdoors, wearing a mask, being distanced, being vaccinated, in the situation like what's being proposed at Dodgers, three of those four are going to be met. We know that the vaccines offer very, very strong protection, and having all three of those lines of defense up gives me confidence that we can try this safely. I think it's really important that, we do this slowly and carefully, that we pay attention to what happens and are tracking our rates of the coronavirus and what happens from events like this. But again, I think that our numbers are looking really good, and we are in a place where we do have very strong ways to protect ourselves and others. Certainly would also, though, suggest that for people who are considering perhaps going to a Dodgers game, if they are vaccinated, to also think about other members of your household and people in your social circle that may not be. Kids, certainly, we know, are not vaccinated yet. And even in California, we are still at less than half of adults who have been vaccinated. So again, it's a matter of using common sense and thinking about risk to yourself and then also risk to the people in your life.
But I thought from what we were seeing of the early studies that the risk of a fully vaccinated person passing off virus to an unvaccinated person was pretty small.
It is pretty small. They seem to be about 90% effective at reducing passage of the coronavirus to others. So that is very small. You're absolutely right. But it's not zero. And so, again, just would encourage people to use caution when thinking about who is in their life that might not be vaccinated. But again, I think that having three lines of defense up is really good protection and seems reasonable given where things are at in Los Angeles right now.
We're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. We have Clorinda in Altadena says, "I'm in my first month of pregnancy. I already had the first dose of the Pfizer vaccine. Should I get the second dose?"
Yeah, that's a great question, Clorinda. Right now, the vaccines, as they were currently approved by the FDA for emergency use, those studies did not include pregnant people. And so there are pregnancy trials going on right now, but we don't yet have that data officially out in the most rigorous form possible from Pfizer and Moderna. That being said, the CDC has been keeping a vaccine registry where they are closely tracking pregnant people who receive the vaccines. And there was just a report that came out, I believe it was yesterday, showing that there's no evidence so far among, you know, tens of thousands of people who have been vaccinated while pregnant that the vaccines pose any risk. Any adverse birth outcomes, things like preterm birth or miscarriage, they're all happening at comparable rates to people who are pregnant in general, and it doesn't appear that the vaccines provide any additional risk. Right now, most of the guidance I'm seeing is that whether or not to get the vaccine is a conversation that pregnant people should have with their personal physician or healthcare provider, but it does seem like they are safe so far from what we can tell.
So again, those preliminary findings that you just referenced from the CDC, this covers the first 11 weeks of the vaccination program. So it's at least positive. And one of the things that I've heard from our experts over the course of these many months is that it doesn't appear that there would be a mechanism for causing fetal harm from the vaccine.
Yes, absolutely. So with the mRNA vaccines in particular, you know, mRNA is something that once it goes into our cells and they process it, it's broken down almost immediately. And there's no mechanism that we know of right now that would lead to fetal harm as far as we know. Again, I want to talk about it cautiously because those randomized trials that we kind of consider the gold standard of scientific evidence are not finished yet. But so far, all evidence as well as what we know about how the vaccines work seems like they will probably be safe.
So, Professor, we can't take the results we like that haven't been peer-reviewed and tout those and just downplay the ones that haven't been peer-reviewed that we don't like the results from. That's not good science.
Yeah, absolutely.
So satisfying.
With the data from the CDC, it's important to know that this was a voluntary registry of people who chose to input their symptoms and their birth outcomes. And so we can't say for sure that that's representative of all people just yet.
We're talking with a professor at UCLA, Professor of Nursing and Public Health, Kristen R. Choi. She's also a registered nurse practicing at Gateways Hospital in Echo Park. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. More than a third of American adults have now been vaccinated. So very impressive to see, even with those who were vaccine resistant and holding out, that so many Americans have had access and are choosing to be vaccinated. If you have questions for Professor Choi, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. Stephen LaCagnata says, has there been a study published yet on the percent of moderate to severe illnesses that have broken through with vaccinated people? Have we seen on those breakthrough cases the severity, Professor Choi?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I don't believe there have been any large-scale studies published on that just yet. Mostly what we've heard is of, you know, smaller case reports of that happening. As I mentioned earlier, you know, the vaccines are not 100% effective. Even though they're very effective, the chance of getting the coronavirus is not zero. And so it's unsurprising, given that we've now given so many millions of vaccines, that we would see these cases. For the vast majority of people, though, and the vast majority of circumstances, we can expect that the vaccines will offer very strong protection.
Yeah, and probably a number of these are asymptomatic, that unless the individual tested, you wouldn't even necessarily know that they broke through.
Yes, that's absolutely right, especially because the vaccines, as they were tested, showed that they were very effective preventing severe COVID. And now evidence has come out showing that it prevents less severe and asymptomatic COVID as well. But you're right that we can't necessarily know that for sure.
All right. We have Zach, who tweeted at AirTalk, I made a shirt that reads friendly and vaccinated. I made it years ago during the measles outbreak, and I've been wearing it recently, like when I got the Pfizer shot number 2. And he kindly tweeted a photo of himself wearing the shirt. Zach, thanks very much. I appreciate it. 866-893-KPECC. Shirley in Menifee says, I recently got back into Zumba classes. It's socially distanced, but indoors. I've been wearing a mask. I've seen some people start with a mask, take it off midway through the workout as they get really hot. I'm fully vaccinated. I'm wondering, is it okay for me to take off my mask as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. And again, I kind of circle back to what I mentioned earlier about those kind of four potential lines of defense that we have: being outdoors, wearing a mask, being distanced, and being vaccinated. So in the situation that you're talking about, being indoors, being distanced, and I don't know if you're vaccinated, Shirley, or it sounds like some people are not wearing masks.
She is, yeah.
So wearing a mask. So that sounds like two lines of defense if people are removing their masks. And again, it's a matter of kind of weighing the risk. It's not ideal. And in an indoor situation, I certainly think it's preferable for people to be wearing masks. And for classes like Zumba, if it's possible to participate in them outdoors, I think that's potentially a good solution as well to having a hard time breathing while you're exercising.
Jessica in La Cunada says, my father's in his 70s, healthy, fully vaccinated, coming to California to visit my family. He's flying from Boston. My husband and I are also fully vaccinated, but our kids aren't. Is it okay for him to stay with us? Can we be unmasked inside? What precautions do we need to take?
Yeah, so again, right now it's looking like for folks who are fully vaccinated, which sounds like it will be most people in your family there, it is safe for people to be together and to be unmasked. Kids are a really difficult group right now because we don't have vaccines available for them just yet, although I hope that we will soon. I think that in this scenario, you know, as much as it's possible to, again, observe distance, perhaps doing things outdoors, I think that can help reduce risk for your kids. But, you know, I feel really confident that the vaccines and how well they work at reducing transmission is something that would probably make a gathering like this safe for even for your kids.
All right. We're at 866-893-KPECC. A reminder coming up at 11 o'clock. I'll be hosting a regional call-in program throughout the American West. We'll be talking about the climate emergency in which we're living and talk about what the effects of that are up and down California, in Colorado, Arizona, southern Nevada. We'll hear from reporters in a number of the newsrooms with which we're collaborating, and we'll be hearing from listeners in those many radio markets here in the American West. That's coming up at 11 o'clock, live program. I'll be back with more with Professor Kristen Choi of UCLA in just 1 minute. A little bit later this hour, we focus on our beautiful San Gabriel Mountains. John W. Robinson, for many years, wrote what was essentially the Bible for hikers in the Angeles National Forest, Trails of the Angeles, in which he chose 100 favorite hikes that he regularly traversed and wrote about in his book. A couple of years ago, we lost John W. Robinson, but there is a local college professor who has picked up the task and has thoroughly revamped the book. Some of the trails that are no longer accessible have been removed. He's added new ones to it. We'll talk with him coming up in just a few minutes. And I look forward to hearing your favorite hikes in the Angeles National Forest and the San Gabriel Mountains generally. That's in just a few minutes. But right now, our focus on COVID-19, the very latest with UCLA professor of Nursing and Public Health, Kristen R. Choi. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Brooke in Whittier said, I'm 27. I'd like to have kids. I've heard rumors the vaccine can make people sterile. I'm hesitant to believe this, but I'm hoping to get some peace of mind. Yeah, Brooke, there are just so many unsubstantiated rumors and things that are out there on social media. And I know the social media platforms have tried to flag those things as false or as unsubstantiated. But Professor Choi, some of these claims about the vaccines are very resilient.
Yeah, absolutely. And Brooke, to this question you have, right now, this is absolutely something that we would be considered a myth about the vaccines. There's no evidence at all that they will lead to sterility or any kind of birth issues. You know, we have, of course, not had these vaccines around for very long. They've only been studied since last year, so we don't have very long-term data just yet. But as I mentioned so far, looking at data from thousands and thousands of pregnant women, it doesn't appear that there's any risk to birth at all, and certainly no evidence that they would cause sterility.
All right. Let's see. This is from Jincy, who tweets at AirTalk. We have a family member, a woman in her 60s, who refuses to get vaccinated. All other adults are. Some of the adults feel she should not be invited to the gatherings. Any input would be helpful. I'm in the middle. Get-togethers are at our house. That's Jincy tweeting at AirTalk. Professor Choi, what advice would you give her?
Sure. So when it comes to people who don't want to get the COVID vaccines, I think it's first important to explore with them the reasons why. I am doing research right now on vaccine confidence and hesitancy, and what I've learned is that, you know, people who don't want to get the vaccines, it's not always necessarily because they're very strongly against vaccinations. Sometimes people just have questions and concerns and things that can actually be addressed. So I think that with this family member, it's worth having a conversation and perhaps learning more about the reasons why, and if there's anything that can be changed there. I think that beyond that, though, you know, for people who choose not to get vaccinated, again, we have other lines of defense that they can consider using. So wearing a mask, perhaps having gatherings outside, and those kinds of things might allow them to participate. Certainly understand the concerns of your family that you ideally want everyone to be vaccinated and to know that we're all protecting each other. But I think in the absence of that, wearing a mask, being outside, being distance are good alternatives. And again, would really encourage people to have open conversations with those who might have concerns about the vaccines and to explore the reasons why. It's not always that people are firmly against them.
Connie in Los Feliz, welcome to Air Talk. Your question, please.
Hi, my question is, if I have older school age children who aren't eligible for the vaccine yet, obviously, but I'm vaccinated, if I go back to breastfeeding those older kids, will they get some of my antibodies?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Connie. You know, I've seen some reports looking at this issue and this question and heard of some cases of pregnant or breastfeeding women who are doing this, giving milk to older children and hoping that it will pass on antibodies. There haven't actually been any studies of this, and so we can't really say for sure, you know, how much protection that offers or how long it lasts. From what we know of infants, it seems like they will receive the antibodies while they're breastfeeding. I think if they stop drinking breast milk, that protection will go down. So it's something that hasn't been explored in research. In theory, it seems like it might give them temporary protection, but probably not something that would be sustained. The good news is I don't know exactly how old your children are, but you know, we are hoping soon that younger teens will be eligible to get the vaccines and that the trials going on of younger children and even infants right now will have promising results soon. So I certainly hope that your kids will be eligible to get a vaccine themselves soon here.
Connie, appreciate it. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Anibal writes on the page, I got my J&J vaccine last week. It was my preferred choice and the one I could get sooner. I may not be as protected, but should I be concerned about catching a severe case of COVID? Can I start hanging out with people who got fully vaccinated with Pfizer and Moderna?
That is a great question. And, you know, for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, the answer is yes. You absolutely can be confident that it will protect you and that it will work very well. In studies of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, it was highly effective at preventing severe COVID and hospitalization, the same as Pfizer and Moderna. And even though, you know, we did hear reports and the research suggested that its efficacy rate was a little bit lower, it's really important to know that we can't directly compare the vaccines. They were tested at very different contexts and at very different times in the pandemic. And right now, evidence that we have suggests that all three are highly effective. So yes, you can absolutely be confident in that vaccine and the protection that it offers.
We have Roy in Los Angeles who is referencing a Nature article, the magazine journal Nature, titled Five Reasons Why COVID Herd Immunity is Probably Impossible, Even with Vaccination Efforts in Full Force. The theoretical threshold for vanquishing COVID-19 looks to be out of reach. And Roy is interested, you know, what did we learn coming out of the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, a regular flu season and flu shots? You know, what do we learn from the past about whether it's possible to vanquish COVID-19 or whether it's a seasonal recurrer?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I haven't read this particular article myself, but I think that it's a fair point that I'm not sure if we can think that we will entirely wipe out the coronavirus and that we will never see it again in the future. Right now, we're already seeing variant strains emerging, and we know that herd immunity is something that is a lot of countries in the world are very far away from being at that point. I think it might be more reasonable to think of the coronavirus perhaps like we do think of the flu vaccine. That's something that will be seasonal. And yeah, I think it's a fair concern to think that completely wiping it out is perhaps something that is not likely based on what pandemics in the past have looked like and what we know about more recent disease spreads and things like the flu. But that being said, I think that we certainly can get it under better control than what we've had in the past year or so, and we're making good progress towards that now. If we do need a booster in the future, I certainly hope that it will be something that doesn't become out of control the way it did back in 2020.
Lou in Pasadena said, I got my first Moderna vax, and about a week later, I got COVID. I'm wondering how long I should wait before getting my second Moderna vaccination.
I'm sorry to hear that. We know the vaccines work really well. Certainly after that first dose, while immunity is building, it is possible to contract the coronavirus. Right now, I believe that the recommendation is still that people get it on schedule. For the Moderna vaccine, that would be 4 weeks after the first dose. As certainly, though, if it's possible, it would be good to be tested and wait the 10 days in between, which would come within that 4 weeks anyways. So right now, as far as I'm aware, guidance is still to get it on schedule.
All right. And we've had a number of questions about unvaccinated kids and bringing grandparents into the home. And you know, if everybody but the kids have been vaccinated, do the grandparents have to be masked? My reading of the CDC recommendations was that you can have a household of unvaccinated people at low risk with everyone else being fully vaccinated. Would that hold in circumstances like this?
Yeah, that is the general guidance from the CDC. And again, for these sorts of family gathering questions where there is going to be some people who are vaccinated and some who aren't, especially kids, again, I think it's important just to think about common sense and how can you have as many of those lines of defense in place as you can. Having part of the group vaccinated is great. That's definitely really helpful, especially for older family members. And for kids, you know, thinking about perhaps having gatherings outside, having them wear masks, those kinds of things can really help to put up more barriers to spread and reduce risk. And again, I think using common sense, thinking about how can you keep things small outside and have people either vaccinated or masked is the best way to handle this and make sure that it's safe for everyone.
A Washington Post Kaiser Family Foundation poll found that roughly 3 in 10 healthcare workers have weighed leaving their profession. More than half say they're burned out. And about 6 in 10 say stress from the pandemic has harmed their mental health. I would have thought it would be even higher than that. And I would have thought more than roughly 3 in 10 would have considered leaving the profession, because I'd assume there's some percentage at all times that, given the demands of healthcare, are considering a change. But Professor Choi, when you look at those numbers, what do you think should be the profession's response to that?
Yeah, so these sort of numbers really concern me, Larry. We were in not a great place when it comes to our healthcare workforce before the COVID-19 pandemic. In particular, we've had a very serious shortage of nurses in the United States, and hearing of people who intend to leave the profession or perhaps leave hospital settings because of burnout and stress from COVID means that we may be in a dangerous place in the future where we don't have enough staff to take care of people that we need in our healthcare systems. There were also some a research study that came out recently showing that nurses are at really high risk of suicide, higher than the general population. And again, these things concern me because having a healthy workforce, and that means also having doctors and nurses who are not burnt out, is essential for the rest of us to be able to get the health care that we need. I think it's really important for medical and nursing organizations and for hospitals to really think about how burnout issues can be addressed, to think about making working conditions safe and such that people feel supported and are not overtaxed and overburdened in their work, and also having time for people to take time off and know that it's okay. The burnout is a huge concern to me.
Well, and you know, we think of, importantly, the people that are doing actual care of COVID-19 patients, but there's so many other people in healthcare that have been affected in other ways. Sometimes it's economic because you've got, you know, doctors' offices that have been seeing very few patients, and so the revenue coming into the practice has been very small, or other parts of the hospital that are typically staffed for doing surgeries that are not deemed essential have seen a drop off there. So, you know, we appropriately think about the sort of COVID-19 very direct stress of caring for patients, but also important to look at really the entire system, Professor Choi, has been stressed.
Absolutely, absolutely. We know that a lot of healthcare systems have lost revenue. It's a bit counterintuitive, I think, for people because it was a pandemic, but many, many areas of healthcare saw big drops in people coming in to get care, and that means a lot of them lost money last year, and that's a concern for people's economic well-being and their jobs in healthcare, as well as thinking about how our care systems will go forward. One of the bright spots in this is that we have seen record numbers of applications to medical school, nursing school, public health, all kinds of health professions as a result of this pandemic. That really gives me hope that there are still people who want to enter the healthcare profession, and I hope that we can make space for those folks in our colleges and, you know, really think about expanding our healthcare workforce, especially given that we may lose more people this year to retirement or to changing jobs because of the pandemic.
I didn't realize that. That's news to me, that the demand is so much greater, even in this time where healthcare workers are incredibly stressed. That's wonderful to hear. And as you say, hopefully this will lead to improved capacity for the training of physicians and nurses and other healthcare workers to be able to build up that workforce, particularly with an aging population. Professor Choi, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Professor Kristen R. Choi, Professor of Nursing and Public Health at UCLA and registered nurse practicing at Gateways Hospital in Echo Park. You're listening to Air Talk on KPCC. I want to hear from you now. Your favorite hike in the San Gabriel Mountains. What is the one that you love, that you look forward to? Also look forward to your sharing the experience of hiking in the Angeles National Forest during this time of the pandemic. Any changes that you've had to make? Of course, we've had two major fires that have had a huge effect on the trails and on the environment of the Angeles. I want to hear your thoughts about that too. 866-893-KPECC. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.